through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy.
Live from Seahawks training camp.
On 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, our training camp coverage is presented by Precor Home Fitness. Jake and I have been out there all week. And I am trying not to complain about how hot it is because I know that the guys are out there in pads and sweatpants and are working out. But I'm thinking it.
Stacy, you almost sweat like the moment that you show up at the VMAC, you are sweating.
Sweat was dripping down my face. You know why? Because I drink more iced coffee than I do water. That's what it. I really think what it is that the inside of my body is a toxic wasteland.
I was looking at you.
Crying for water.
And it was hot. It was hot.
Yes.
No doubt.
Yeah.
And I eventually got to where you were about halfway through practice.
I just run hot.
But I was just like, what is going on?
I don't know what it is. At all times.
I was worried.
I'm way too hot. But it's just, I can't.
That's why you try to turn the temperature down in here.
That's why I hate summer. I'm only fine between 70 and 73 degrees. That's it. That is where I don't complain. I don't complain if I'm in that frame. And if I'm outside of it, I'll complain constantly.
She is classic Northwest. Ooh. Oh, it's always raining. And then I wish we could have the sun. And the moment the sun comes here and it's beautiful weather.
I'm so annoyed it's hot.
I hate when people in July are like, I just wish it was October.
I just want a pumpkin spice latte.
Oh,
it's 80 degrees outside.
Yeah,
Why would you not want this?
Are you kidding me? This is great. This has been...
You guys don't understand,
the
though, that part of the field at VMAC
in quite some time
is like a microwave.
You want to know why I know it's the best summer in quite some time?
Why?
Because my yard is scorching brown.
Oh, like my yard's ruined.
My grass is just destroyed right now. We're trying to keep... it's already at that point where the yard is just
you're watering
torched.
Dead grass.
Yes. So, we're just trying to maintain dead grass right now.
Just for the feeling that you're not wasting money. Just for the feeling that your yard is still fine.
Oh, my
gosh. You go water it. It's cutting up your feet.
Brooke was like, I feel bad. We haven't watered the grass in 2 days. And it's like... What are we watering to grass?
I don't think that's going to do anything, Brooke.
We might as well just accept reality that, hey, but it's been so hot. If you don't do that, it's going to get even worse.
It's already bad. It's already dead. It's gone. Let it go.
We just got to wait for the rain to come back. But I am enjoying this weather so much.
All right. Well, speaking of the weather, speaking of being at camp, Jake and I each have three things that we saw from camp with what caught our eye. So let's go ahead and get started here. Jake, you take it away first.
All right, what caught my eye at practice is something that, has caught Pete Carroll's eye, too, here in cut number two.
I think he continues to show the special speed and quickness and get-off that we're counting on. He's really rolling. Everything's been going great for him, learning a ton. He's got a lot of stuff he's got to pick up and grow with, but physically he looks like he's the part to give you some special stuff on the edge, in pass rush in particular.
Who is that? Daryl Taylor. Daryl Taylor, so far to me, has looked the part. He has been solid so far, and to me, it's really encouraging because he doesn't look lost out there. And I want to highlight specifically what Pete Carroll said. He talked about it physically. Mentally, he's still got a lot to go in terms of understanding coverage assignments and being in the right place at the right time. That stuff will come, but I think Daryl Taylor has done a fantastic job for basically being a rookie in camp. Daryl Taylor has shown a lot of encouraging signs in his pass rushing ability, in his ability in drop back and coverage. He's actually done a better job than I even anticipated at this stage of the game. I'm really excited to see how he develops through training camp into the preseason and into the regular season. He's going to have bumps in the road, but I have really high hopes and expectations for Daryl Taylor.
All right, looking at offense for this one, and it's exactly what we said to start the show. A lot of miscues yesterday. There was a fumble by Alex Collins, a fumble on kind of a mishandled snap between center Ethan Posick and Russell Wilson. You had kind of a botched pitch that landed to Colby Parkinson dropping the ball, and then a pair of interceptions, one by Wilson, one by Geno Smith. I want to tell you guys right now, training camp is rarely the time to panic. It is rarely the time to panic if Tom Brady throws three interceptions at training camp, it does not mean that he's done and he's over. It doesn't really matter as much at training camp. They're still rolling out a brand new offense, but It's safe to say that the fan base and likely Carroll and Schneider are remaining on edge while waiting to see how quickly Shane Waldron can get things going. You don't have time to waste in this division.
Yes.
Not this year. And you don't have the kind of easy stretches of the schedule you did last year. You've got to get it figured out, and you've got to get it figured out fast. And I fully expect them to enter the season still with some, you know, things that they've got to iron out. And so hopefully in weeks 1 through 3, you start seeing improvement week over week.
I would agree with that fully. And one of the easy things that you can tell right away is that they are committed to trying to hammer out all the little intricacies in terms of the short to intermediate pass game. That has really been the emphasis for this group. And I think it'll continue to be that way over the next couple days as they keep getting things going. And one of the other aspects that you had mentioned is the tempo. The tempo will increase as everybody becomes more familiar and more comfortable with the system. I anticipate that to get turned up as we progress closer and closer to the season as well. And I think that it's fair to say that that is exactly what Carroll and Schneider are thinking as well through this process, that they're on pins and needles here. They want this thing to work out. They trust in Shane Waldron. They've got a lot of belief in him and what he can do. But ultimately, he's got to prove it. He's got to go out and show that he's the man for the job, and he was the right guy for Pete Carroll to hire to take this offense, not just maintain, but to get them over the hump and to make them even better than what they've been. All right, so for all the talk about how practice, it was sloppy, it wasn't good for the offense, there's one part of practice that I thought was very, very good, and that was at the final team period of the day to finish it out. They did a move it period where they moved the ball. So, all right, we're going to do first, second, third down. We're going to start on the minus 40-yard line, and the offense has got to go move it in to score, and the defense is trying to stop them. Well, that drive, Russell Wilson looked really dang sharp. Going through his progressions, going through his reads, stepping up in the pocket, having to make some throws on the run, attacking the middle of the field. I thought he looked really sharp to finish out the day and finished with a touchdown throw to Will Dissly on the goal line. So when you talk about all those other miscues, when you just let this offense go and you let your quarterback work, when it's all said and done, It all came together and looked really, really sharp. DK Metcalf got involved. Will Dissly gets involved. Tyler Lockett, the ball was spread around to a bunch of different targets, finishing down the low red zone. I thought that was really positive. And there's been, you know, as you expect with Russell Wilson, I just think that through the ironing out process, there has been some real glimpses and some real flashes of, wow, this offense can really take off. And if they can add this portion into it, into actual games, man, this is going to make this group really, really fun.
All right, so I'm jumping right into mine because it's related to yours. So rather than comment, I'm just going to tell you what I saw, and then we'll branch off into that same topic of the offense kind of working together to see what they're incorporating that's new and different. I saw Russell Wilson, this was actually on Wednesday, chatting a bit with Colby Parkinson while the second and third team was on the field for 11-on-11s. Obviously, I don't know what they were saying, but the intention to me was clear that Russell Wilson and presumably Shane Waldron are working to incorporate a target like Parkinson into that offense and to get him up to speed. And from a distance, it certainly seems like Colby Parkinson is willing to learn. I mean, he is getting a lot of targets.
Yeah.
And I think that, too, what you're seeing is the offense talking with each other. And I always personally like seeing older veteran players talking with younger players about, hey, here's what I saw, here's what you did, you know, whatever, whatever. I don't expect that Colby would take targets away from a guy like Gerald Everett. Most of the big starters you're not seeing a ton of just because they don't want to get them overworked in camp. So this is when you're going to see guys that don't have a lot of experience. A guy like Daryl Taylor that didn't get a chance to play last year is out there a lot. You know what I mean? He's getting a yeah. lot of reps, and it's the same thing with Colby Parkinson. So far, it certainly seems like the team's excited about both of those guys.
They are excited about both those guys. But Colby Parkinson, just to reiterate what you said, his eagerness to learn, yeah, no doubt about that. Maybe it's his background of being at Stanford. I don't know. Dave Wyman would probably say so. I think with Colby Parkinson, he really made a concerted effort to work out with Russell Wilson as much as he possibly could down in San Diego. He was at a lot of our workouts that we were putting together down there. And I think that what you're seeing for him in this second year is him being more confident, him being more comfortable. And I think a lot of the work that he put in this offseason is paying off so far in training camp. And he's 6'7". He's 6'7", 250 pounds, and he runs extremely well. He's got great hands. you absolutely have to find a way to get this guy involved in this offense, as well as Will Dissly and Gerald Everett. It's a good tight end group, and I'm very hopeful that Shane Waldron can really unlock this group and make them contributors to this offense, because it'll really help out DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and Russell Wilson. One player that continues to keep taking advantage of the absence of Dwayne
Eskridge. You're doing Eskridge. The clap emoji between each word.
Is Penny Hart. I love this kid. I love Penny Hart. And the reason why is because he's Mighty Mouse. He is the guy that everybody kind of doubts. I mean, you go look at his numbers in terms of his pro day. They're not great. It's like 4.6. And look at his shuttle times. They don't wow you. But this guy is fast and electric on the field. He's what we call game speed. And the reason why I know that he is having a great amount of success is yesterday they put him at running back and they gave him a toss sweep. And he took it to the house. Mm-hmm. I mean, he went out, made a great first cut upfield, and then stuck his foot in the ground and cut it all the way back and ran to the opposite corner, opposite pylon, and ended up scoring. I mean, he looked explosive. Fast, and it also shows his ability to be diverse in the way that this offense can implement him. Ultimately, I want to see that be Dwayne Eskridge, right, and not Penny Hart, but Penny Hart's proven himself, and he's definitely making some noise and showing that this team, that hey, he can have a role on this offense, and they can trust him.
Yeah, Eskridge, I do wonder how close he is. It feels like he's somewhat close because he was out there during the open portion of practice at the very, very beginning when guys are just kind of stretching and getting on the field, kind of running some laps. So he at least looks from afar like he would be ready, but it sounds like they're just being extra cautious about him. Penny Hart, to me, with the addition of Eskridge, who's obviously going to take up one of those top three spots, Penny Hart, to me, is a guy that could challenge a guy like John Ursua for a spot. You know what I mean? Like, when you look at the last, say that they keep five receivers, those last two spots, you've got Freddie Swain and Penny Hart competing with a guy like John Ursua and, I don't know who else, Cody Thompson. He's probably a practice squad guy. But whoever else comes out of that group of, you know, there are 13 receivers at camp right now. Obviously, DK Metcalf, given. Tyler Lockett, given. Dwayne Eskridge, given. Then you've got a couple spots that a ton of guys are competing for. Essentially, mm-hmm. 10 guys are competing for. And it could be, you know, a really tough camp, a make or break camp for a guy like Ursua. All right, last one for me. Wednesday, just so you guys know, it was the second padded practice of camp and easily, to me, the most physical practice of camp yet. It was more eventful, and it really felt like a day when the defense got going. And I don't think it's a coincidence, Jake, that the defense had a better day and a more physical day when Bobby Wagner and Carlos Dunlap were playing, because both were gone on Tuesday. Carlos Dunlap was out, just resting. He was sitting out. And then Bobby Wagner missed both Monday and Tuesday for personal reasons. And I am curious to see who the next guy is to step up in that kind of energizer role, right? Bobby Wagner is the guy that's going to, there's a quality, a standard that becomes higher when he's playing next to you, when you're like on your best behavior.
Yeah.
But he's also pumping guys up. Like, he's talking with guys after plays. He's trash talking the offense. He's high fiving guys when they do something right. He's, you know, leading the pack when guys go congratulate someone after a pick or whatever. Quandre Diggs is one of those guys who's really high energy, but I'm just curious to see who are going to be the anchors of the defense to keep that standard high. Should Bobby Wagner or should Carlos Dunlap not be there? All right. And our training camp coverage, by the way, presented by Precor Home Fitness. It is time for Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake. What positive injury update news did we hear from Pete Carroll yesterday?
Well, we got an update on Dwayne Eskridge, and finally, we got some positive news here in cut number one.
He's figured out some, he and the equipment guys have figured out an equipment thing with shoes-wise. He ran really well. If it was this morning or yesterday, I can't remember which day it was. I think it might have been this morning. He ran really well. It's a really good positive sign. He felt great about it, didn't feel a thing. So we got to build up some days in conditioning and start to figure out where we can get him back out.
Okay, so like the scientific term of that, of what he just said, It's a shoe thing to help out the foot. Stacey, you got that?
Mm-hmm.
The shoe thing. That's what the key was, is they figured out a shoe thing. The equipment people to get it figured out. Now, basically what ends up happening is sometimes when you have turf toe or you have ligament damage in your toe, sometimes there's ways to alleviate that pain in your foot. Sometimes it's having a straight up plate in your foot. There's no give in the sole of the shoe. Sometimes there's padding that they can put on at the edge of the shoe. Whatever concoction they came up with,
it's just inserts.
It's worked out for Dwayne Eskridge, and hopefully that means that you're going to see him out on the field after they've given it a couple more days. I would imagine through the weekend to allow and see if while he's cutting and trying to go 100% speed that he can come back to practice starting next week. That'd be my guess. But you got to get him back out here. I mean, you need him here getting reps with this team, with Russell Wilson, with this offense so that he can etch out a role for himself. But finally, we're hearing some positive news on that front at least.
All right, second down. Jake, what elite company does Russell Wilson belong with in regards to career touchdown to interception ratio?
Russell Wilson is one of two players in NFL history to have at least 250 passing touchdowns and less than 100 interceptions.
Can I guess the other?
Yep.
Aaron Rodgers.
Yep. It's Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers. They are the only two in NFL history that belong in that elite category. That is pretty elite stuff. And with Aaron Rodgers, obviously, it's very impressive. He's got a few more years on Russell Wilson in terms of how long he's been in the league. But it just goes to show that, look, yeah, we had some interception issues last year with Russell Wilson. That's not indicative of the type of player that he is overall. He's one of the best in the league in terms of touchdown to interception ratio. I think he'll get very much back to that this year. I expect a very explosive year for Russell Wilson, but that's it's a pretty impressive stat to have in your resume right there.
Third down. Jake, from practice on Monday, you mentioned that Will Disley had a nice little red zone touchdown on a choice route. So this text directly from the text line, directly from a listener. Jake, what is a choice route?
Yeah, I kept bringing it up, and sometimes I get caught up in the football vernacular, and sometimes I forget that, hey, look, simple things like choice route, what is that? A choice route is basically an underneath pattern where you can go 5 yards. You know, it happens somewhere between 5-8 yards downfield. And depending on the play, it's a three-way go. So the receiver can decide to break in, can break out, or settle. If the zone is soft and there's a complete void in the zone, they could just turn right, give their numbers to the quarterback, and there the ball is placed on them. But it's a route that the post-snap, the receiver, whoever's running this choice route, the receiver and the quarterback have to be on the same page. They have to see the same thing in regards to what the defense, how they're defending that particular receiver so that they know as it's happening, hey, I'm going to break in. I'm going to break out. And so it takes a lot of practice. It takes a lot of being on the same page and understanding what defenses are trying to do to you in that moment. But if you find a receiver that and find multiple receivers that can do it at a high level, man, it's really tough to stop. It's really, really tough to stop. And honestly, it's cheap, easy completions. And that's something that's been missing from this offense that I believe Tyler Lockett's very capable of doing. DK Metcalf can do. And I believe that this tight end group is very capable of doing that as well.
Fourth down. Jake, what stood out so far from the offensive line?
A whole lot of beef. I mean, you look at that offensive line, that starting group for the Seahawks, Brandon Shell.
Phil Haynes beef boys?
I mean, it. Gabe Jackson makes Phil Haynes look small. And that's not an easy thing to do in any stretch. Gabe Jackson is a monster of a human being. He is a walking Coke machine. He is just huge and stout. And then you go down the list, Ethan Posick at 6'4", 6'5". Then Damian Lewis, and eventually you'll have Dwayne Brown, who right now is just working out, and he walks out on the field, and his arms, his veins are just popping out of his bicep because he just got done with curls or something. I mean, the guy is huge. This offensive line is huge, and what you hope that their size can match the athleticism. We know Dwayne Brown, we know Damian Lewis are exceptionally athletic. I'm going to be curious to see how Brandon Schell and Gabe Jackson, for instance, how they do in this zone scheme and this zone system, because it requires a great deal of athleticism moving side to side rather than getting straight up downhill. So that's going to be a big part of it. But in terms of pass protection, I think they've got the makings to be a pretty solid pass protecting unit.
You know what I'll say, and this isn't about the offensive line, but just about like especially bigger football players in general. It is always so funny to me when any normal person thinks that in any way they could do something better than a player, be more physical than a player. Because when you're on in training camp on the sideline, like our radio booth is about 20 yards away from where the defensive line usually works out every day. So the other day, you, Wyman, and I were going to walk to the sideline, the grassy sideline. Mm-hmm. And so we're on the cement and we are right by. Like, we are right by the defensive line. And I was just thinking, like, I can't believe that there are humans this big and they're like 24 years old.
Yeah, imagine being in that pocket and having those guys
want
to tear your head off.
Or you see speed, right? Like, I was just talking about John Ursua, and he was, I don't know if he was trying a kick return, or I wasn't paying attention to half of it. It was really early. And you just see game speed, and you think, this is a guy that's currently working to get on the roster. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a guy that's like a bubble player that runs faster than anyone I've seen. Like, it's just, there's just such an amazing display of athleticism that isn't immediately apparent when you see all these guys on the field together. And that sounds like a very basic observation, but it's just something that even covering football or any sport, you never really get tired or used to how athletic some of these guys are.
The speed of the game, the size of the game, the violence of the game is incredibly different, experiencing it up close and personal. Not even in the stands, but being on the sideline to watch it all,
yeah,
and to hear the violence, the violent collisions and all those things. It is very different. And even to a professional athlete who watches the game and all those things, those guys still can appreciate what they're doing. It's a very incredible how elite these athletes are.
All right, coming up in the timeline, Giants OC Jason Garrett causing a little bit of a controversy in New York. Also, Lions head coach Dan Campbell drinks more coffee than anyone I've ever met. I want you to think of the most coffee you've had in a day, and it's more than that. It's wild. That's next in the timeline.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by the Pro Club, and it is The Timeline, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your timeline, meaning these are all from tweets that Curtis and I saw this morning when I was drinking my coffee.
Yeah.
And speaking of coffee, let me get started with this one. Dan Campbell, head coach of the Lions. We already know he's weird in a way that you don't mind, but he's weird. He's the guy, if you didn't know, that was talking about biting kneecaps off. And I guess that's all I have to say about that. I don't know if he was asked about it.
What more could you say?
I don't know in what context this question came up, because I saw it isolated from a press conference, but he talks about how much coffee he has every day. Take a listen.
Well, normally what I do is I'll get two venti. I go to, Starbucks. I get two venti of the pipe with two shots in them. So black eye and both. That's what I come in with. That's how I start the day.
I just want you guys to know 80 ounces is over half a gallon. So he has half a gallon plus of coffee with four espresso shots. And I don't know how he's alive. I truly don't know how he is walking the earth as a living, breathing human right now. Like, I'm baffled.
Campbell's not like the rest of us, though.
It seems healthy, right? I mean,
First of all, how are you not throwing up every day and have 20 ulcers? Secondly, if I have a lot of work to do in a day, and I know this from being in college procrastinating things, I'll get like a quad shot over ice. Every time I do that, I know that a couple, like maybe 2 hours after I have it, I will have the highest level of anxiety I've ever had in my life. I feel like I am on drugs. He has more than that.
Well, he's also does tolerance work out? Like, I know.
I'm sure size makes a difference.
I don't drink alcohol, but like your body, affects how
that
much you can consume. Is that the
coffee.
Same thing with coffee or no? I don't know how that applies, but that's the only way that this makes sense. I don't know how you can consume this much coffee on a daily basis.
I have to believe that his heartbeat is that of a hummingbird. Like, like, you know how when Secretariat died, they took out Secretariat's heart and it was like four times the size of a normal horse heart.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, wow, that's probably why Secretariat was like wicked good at racing. I wonder if that's going to happen. This is dark, but like Dan Campbell, there's just something about his body that truly allows him to have this much coffee in a way no other human could.
I mean, maybe.
I'm convinced that this is true.
It's unbelievable.
All right, next story here.
I'd explain half the stuff that comes out of his mouth.
If you saw Jason Garrett or Coach trending on Twitter, here's why. Jason Garrett insists on being called Coach.
Good to see you guys.
Likewise.
Yeah.
Good to see you in person.
Yeah, we say good to see you, Coach. That's how we do it.
So he was in a press conference and they all said something like, so this is from Pat Leonard, who tweeted, he was a reporter, Giants reporter. He was at the press conference. So he said all the reporters were like, hey, Jason, nice to meet you in person. And then Jason Garrett corrected them by saying it's actually Coach. That's how we go it.
Right.
That's how we do it.
What a jerk move, first and foremost. And then the second thing is, hey, I this might be really awkward, but like, Jason, you're not a head coach anymore. You are the offensive coordinator. Like, no one needs to, you know, bow down to you or cow to you or you know, give you that what you're seeking. Like, I don't understand this. And for coaches to act like that, it's when we give interviews, right? It's, hey, I'm either addressing you by your first name or I'm going to call you, you know, Scott Service, we call him Skip, or with Coach Carroll, you call him Coach. Like, that's acceptable. That's fine. But I don't need to just solely call you Coach. When you're in the media, like, you're not our boss. We don't have that relationship with you that you have with everybody else in your building that you oversee. Like, I just don't understand this.
Yeah, I think that I have seen people say, well, you'd call a doctor a doctor. And it's like, well, I mean, I guess I wouldn't call a random person I met on the street that happened to be a doctor, doctor. Although I guess as a formal introduction, you would, because it's a degree. So it's just different to me. I find it really weird being in press conferences, prefacing something with Coach. Like, it makes me feel weird. Like, I'm not your player. I'm not, it feels like I'm sucking up to you in a weird way. Like, I'm not, it just, it feels very foreign to start with, hey, Coach. And I think it's really bold of Jason Garrett, an offensive coordinator, to tell people to do that. Like, what an ego. Like, it's not about people not respecting other people.
No, not
like,
at all.
Like, I say sir, I say ma'am, but like, it's more about expecting that reporters will work for you.
Correct.
Their job isn't to work for you. Their job is to ask you questions and report on the team.
Right. It's very bizarre. And I think with Jason Garrett here, he's out of line for taking this approach. But hey, I guess power to you. And we'll see how that pans out for you with the New York media. I'm sure they'd love that.
So the original tweet that I saw about Dan Campbell, by the way, said 80 ounces. And then in the cut, he says two ventis, which is between 20, I know venti is 20, but I think it's like up to 24, whatever, if you fill it up. So the text line obviously correcting me. My bad.
Yes,
a very cool 40 ounces of coffee.
Starbucks experts over here got on this real quick. Nope, venti is 20 ounces.
Venti's,
it's not
20,
40.
Actually. Yeah, that's still an unhealthy amount of coffee. I don't even care. Last story here. You know, Aaron Rodgers will reportedly not be the next host of Jeopardy. I know that this is shocking to a lot of people. Curtis, huge Jeopardy fan, I'm sure very shocked.
Shocked?
No, you're not. You're
I'm more shocked about the choice that they are going with.
Wait, are they not going with Ken Jennings?
No, they're going with Mike Richards, who is the executive producer of Jeopardy right now.
Really? Now,
he was the guy that hosted second after Ken Jennings.
Okay. So, here's the thing. Ken Jennings might have had a better chance if he wouldn't have ducked out
Aaron
Rodgers here. I think that that's what Jeopardy looked at.
They said,
you're not a true competitor,
yep,
and you're not down to battle anybody at any given time. Therefore, we have to go with somebody else. So I think in the long scope of things, like Pete Carroll always says, always compete.
If you're going to hold the title belt of greatest of all time, you better be prepared to defend it at all times.
That's exactly right.
Come on,
Jennings will never forget enemy of the show. I'll say it right here, right now. Enemy of the show, Ken Jennings. Enemy of the show, Troy Aikman.
And the city of Wichita, Kansas.
And the city of Wichita, Kansas. I forgot we have three enemies of the show now. We need to be a little careful with how many enemies we create because, you know, we don't want to be villains here. But I
don't know.
Three is a healthy number.
The villain role is kind of fun.
I guess we lean into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. All right. We've got the latest on the Mariners from Jerry DePoto, who joined Danny and Gallant this morning. We'll tell you everything he had to say next. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Live from the sidelines at Seahawks training camp.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
Now here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
This hour, Jake and Stacy, is brought to you by the Pro Club. Jerry DePoto. He's the Mariners general manager.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for that. It's kind of like Jerry who?
Jerry. Very Italian. He joins Danny threw myself off.
Yes, he does.
Nice transition there.
I know.
Once a week
on Thursdays for the Jerry DePoto show. And stop laughing. And he had a ton of updates, obviously, after what was a very eventful week. He'd already joined them to talk about a very controversial trade the Mariners made. But now you've got a week of production from those guys that they acquired. So Jerry DePoto jumping back on to talk about them. So let's focus specifically on what he's seen from Abraham Toro in cut number 12.
He's been everything we could have hoped for and more. I don't know if it's reasonable to expect that he'll perform at the 1400, 1500 OPS level for forever, but he has been phenomenal and he does a lot of really good things. You know, he's a switch hitter. He manages the strike zone really well. He's a guy who doesn't strike out much in an era where they strike out a lot. He's got power from both sides. He's got hitability from both sides, and he plays multiple positions. He's an above-average runner. He was a player that we have pursued for quite some time, and you know, when the shot's open, you have to take it, and we're really glad he's a Mariner.
I, too, would assume that Abraham Toro will not continue to be batting at 429, just a safe bet.
Yeah, it's
but
probably.
He has been pretty impressive. Since being acquired via trade, 3 home runs.
You kidding me? He's been very impressive.
Yeah.
And watching him and you know, I mean, look, he hasn't played second base really at all. And he comes over with the Mariners. And he's done a pretty good job of it. And you just look at his speed, what he brings to the table. He runs. Has anybody noticed this? He runs with really wide elbows. Like next time you watch him, he runs.
I haven't really noticed it.
But his elbows are really wide.
Does he have kind
so it's
of
like
my
his
form
arms move like across his body as he runs? It's really. Really
You're
weird
doing
looking.
It right now.
It
it's
is.
Very
it's
weird.
It, he runs like this.
Imagine somebody running at you like that.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah going super fast. There's parts of me where like, is he running fast? And then, oh, he beats out a ground ball
yeah,
that he hits
oh,
the
he
shortstop.
Is.
Like,
he
oh
is.
Yeah, he is pretty fast. But regardless of his running form, the fact that he is very good and proficient at both sides when you talk about a switch hitter, I mean, he has done an exceptional job. You know, so far. And my question with Toro, when it comes to the overall construction and building of this roster is, okay, what is his ceiling? What does he look? Is he a guy that can turn into a perennial star in this league? And can he hit for power? Can he do all that? I know we've seen flashes of it, but what type of player can he ultimately be? Because eventually what you're going to need to have, I mean, and you're obviously hoping it from your own lineup with the guys that you're seeing right now, but you're going to have to go and acquire power, right? And you don't have a clear-cut
yeah.
power hitter at this point, but I really love what Toro brings to the team.
Also, by the way, Abraham Toro joined us earlier, and I was trying to delicately ask, what is it like going from a team that's leading your division to a team that's rebuilding, right? It's a big jump in kind of your expectations for the season. And he challenged me on it and was like, well, I mean, last time I checked, I'm paraphrasing what he said. He didn't say this, but, you know, last time I checked, we're still in the race for the wild card spot.
Yeah,
so,
I thought you might walk
back,
yourself into trouble there.
Back a little bit. I was trying to be careful about it, but sorry, I'm being honest. It's not like we have to pretend we don't know the Mariners haven't been in the playoffs for 20 years, and that would be
right.
quite a change to go from the Astros lineup currently, you know, leading the division and will probably make a deep playoff push based on just how effective their offense has been to where the Mariners are, which is a team that's been up and down, that it still has, you know, a lot to build toward. And
very, very volatile.
It's very volatile. All right. So some else of what he had to say. He was asked about Kyle Lewis when he could return. Had this to say. Cut 13.
So Kyle, we're hopeful. You know, he's now taking it. He's doing baseball activity. So, you know, he's hitting down in the cages and starting to go through some more explosive athletic movements. We're hopeful that we have him back by month's end. But, you know, again, we are not going to put a hard date on it quite yet. But we are, you know, cautiously optimistic that it's moving along at the right pace, which is a really good thing for us. I think that gets lost in the wash a little bit, is that we, at some point, we will get last year's Rookie of the Year back.
Yeah, it'll be nice. It's great to have that sentiment. I just hope it actually matters when he comes back. You know, like, when Kyle Lewis comes back, I hope it's, all right, here we have the end of August, and we've got September, and we're still in this thing, and, mm-hmm. and let's see what happens here. But it is good that you're getting to this point where it wasn't a total season-ending injury. Jerry, you know, he labels it as cautiously optimistic, so there's still some gray area there, but you know, it would be really, really great to have your Rookie of the Year last year, like Jerry said, back in this lineup.
Now, here's Jerry DePoto on what he's learned about this team.
They're a gritty group. They don't give up. Fast learners is the best way to put it. And, you know, it's sometimes because these have been names that we have spoken about for a number of years now, or that have been on prospect landscapes, or who've been learning in the big leagues, it's sometimes easy to forget how young they are. And, you know, we are one of the youngest teams in the league, and watching them grow and bounce back and occasionally get punched in the nose and then get up off the mat and charge back into the ring. It's been so fun to watch, and a refreshing style of baseball. And again, I think that's going to portend bigger things as we move forward.
Now, I don't disagree with Jerry DePoto on that one. This is a very gritty group, and they do have really young, promising prospects. But where I will push back is I feel like, and this is me interpreting it, I feel like Jerry DePoto, the undercurrent, like the tone of this, is that people are expecting this group to move faster than it is and forget that these guys are still really young. It's just we've been talking about Kelnick for years, and now he's there and you forget that he's good. That's not what I'm paying attention to, though, when I'm being critical. Like, it is not lost on me that Jared Kelnick is young, that Julio mm-hmm. Rodriguez is still a prospect going through the minors, that J.P. Crawford is just now, you know, getting into the swing of things. Like, that's not what's lost on me. What I look at when I look at, oh, this is really starting to feel like it's, you know, make or break, you got to make a push. It's the timeline that DePoto put forward, and the fact that they could have, at the start of the season, acquired older veterans or proven talent that would have helped speed up that process. Like, I'm not getting flustered saying this team needs to find a way to win soon because I've been paying attention to Kelnick for years. It's because we've been told they would win soon.
Okay, but we don't have that much time here, but get closer to what if they had more veterans on this team?
I think being closer in the wild card race.
Okay, so that part of it, I agree with you. They would be closer and probably more competitive and more stable to make a push for a playoff run here at the end of the year. They still can do it, but they would have been more stable, and I think you'd have more confidence in it, right? But in terms of their timeline and the developmental process and the longer scope of things, where they want to be out in 2022, which to me is the most significant for this franchise, the biggest question I have for them is not about the players and everything that you outlined about their developmental process. It's about when this organization is going to take that turn and actually start to invest and heavily invest and start to get aggressive into helping this team become good. That is the part, the mark that I look at and that I worry about more so than anything else, because yeah. I have confidence in these guys developing. And what we've seen this year, Jerry DePoto talking about this gritty group, it has been and very impressive to watch what they have done within this clubhouse, what Scott Servais, what this team has done, Jerry DePoto, the front office, the fines that they have had, Paul Sewald. I mean, my goodness, what? Steckenrider, what like the overall moves and what we've seen this year has been very positive from this group. Now I want to see them take the next step, which is what they have said in terms of timetable will happen in 2022, and they better deliver.
Curtis, I keep getting notifications from you putting me on blast on Twitter.
You put yourself on blast.
Yeah, we got to talk about that.
Okay, we'll have
some
to
point
do it.
This next
we're
hour.
Up against
we'll have
the
to
break.
Do it later. We're
Stacey
up against the break.
Conveniently brings it up now.
Yeah, I know. Here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna get to that later.
We're not
before
this
we
go.
Get to that, though, we are down to number 2 on the most important Seahawks countdown. It's coming your way next.